time for Let's Talk on WPPA, AM 1360, A106 FM, and on the web at WPPARadio.com. Stories making news, special guest interviews, your phone calls, and more. The views expressed on Let's Talk are not necessarily those of the management or staff of WPPA. Now, here's your host, Jay-Z.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to it. It's another edition of Let's Talk. It is a Friday morning. Memorial Day weekend coming up, folks. So this will be our last show until Tuesday, as we are off Monday. And man, we're going out with a bang, because joining us on the program now, as we've been telling you this week, we've got a very special guest joining us. Good friend to the program, State Senator Doug Mastriano joins us. Senator, good morning and welcome back.
It's been a while. Thanks for having me back.
It has been a while. Too long usually in between trips for you and I, but it is good to have you back. And Senator, man, we got a lot to talk about since your last time. And I guess one of the big things you want to talk about, and we want to take advantage of your military background here, the situation with Iran and the U.S. and what's going on now, because, you know, everybody seems to be an expert on this, but no, you certainly are with your background. I would much rather talk to somebody like you than some guy in a suit behind a desk, my friend.
Thank you. So 30 years in the military, but so this is largely an air campaign. You know, this is not really a ground campaign, except the rescue of a downed pilot. But I went on my master's degree. I actually have a master's in the air power from the Air University, the School of Advanced Air and Space Studies. I was one of two Army officers to go to that school and become an air planner. So I have a clue. You know, we've conducted these sorts of plans even as an Army officer. And look, I'm going to lay it out for you. It's a brilliantly executed plan. It's an air campaign. It's a decapitated the strategic leadership in Iran. It's debilitated and degraded its military capability. Its Air Force no longer exists in Iran. Its Navy no longer exists. Yeah, they have a few speedboats, you know, here and there, but whatever. They're flinging, when hostilities are going on, they're flinging, you know, nilly-willy, you know, drones. They can't even surge anymore. They're so degraded. Their nuclear capability and their research facilities, you know, have been severely degraded, and many have been destroyed. Iran has been at war with the United States of America for 47 years. They've been actively killing Americans in the aftermath when they took over that country in 79. They started killing Americans in the 80s. They were behind and supported the attacks on the Marine barracks in Lebanon in 1983 to kill 283 of our men. They attacked, supported the attacks of the American and French embassies the next day in Beirut. They've been behind many of the attacks against Americans in Iraq and Afghanistan. They have used advanced technology to penetrate our vehicles. They're called EFPs. Explosive penetrators, force penetrators, that could defeat our anti-IED vehicles. When I was in Afghanistan with NATO, the Italian special forces and other special forces that operate on the Iranian border trying to interdict the stuff that they were supplying to the Taliban. They've waged war against Americans around the world, killing tens of thousands. So one of my colleagues from the War College sent me a list, and it was jaw-dropping. I'm like, wow, I did not realize how extensive their war has been on us. They thought that they could bring the United States and the world to its knees by closing the Straits of Hormuz. President Trump said, no, we're going to own the Straits of Hormuz and close it. And now the ships, the oil demands, America is energy independent. We're able to supply the world. And now Chinese and other ships are coming to our ports in Texas, which that brand new refinery opened up just a few months ago. Donald Trump is a multi-dimensional chess player because he's thinking strategically. I'm a strategist. Mm-hmm. Three of my master's degrees deal with strategy in some capacity. And so while this is going on in Venezuela, while we're seeing Cuba, while we're seeing Iran, now the United States is in the strongest position it's been with China since when Nixon flew over in 72 or 73. And that's why we saw the royal treatment Donald Trump got by President Xi. President Xi literally rolled out the red carpet for him.
Yeah, he certainly did. And, you know, the other thing, too, Senator, and you're aware of this, is seven different presidents, seven, you know, and party affiliation, what have you. But seven different presidents wanted to deal with this and said they were going to and never did. You know, it took a guy like Donald Trump to finally deal with this, to put it that way.
No, you're right. You know, one of my heroes is Ronald Reagan. Even Reagan couldn't deal with it. I mean, it was a shame. We had the Iran-Contra, which was, a strange way of trying to deal with the situation with the communists in Nicaragua by secretly selling parts to Iran, I guess, to keep their F-14 fleet flying. It was bizarre twists and turns, but none of it after. And it seemed like the Iranians usually had the initiative. That they were attacking our oil ships in the 80s, in 1987, I think it was. And the U.S. Navy was escorting international ships. Those nations, the same nations that weren't helping us then, they're reflagging to American ships to get oil to run through the Straits of Hormuz. It's a strange time, and Donald Trump has acted decisively, and the strategy has worked. I mean, and so yes, the gas prices are a bit high because a good percent of the world's oil is not coming through the Straits at this point. But the Saudis have a pipeline to circumvent it. The UAE has a pipeline as well to circumvent it. So it's not as bad as the oil prices were under Biden. So let's put it in perspective.
And again, but, when we talk so much about this, and it strikes a nerve with me because when Biden's prices were up, we had nothing like this going on, but we still had the media protecting him. It was Putin's price hike, Putin's price hike. Blame everybody but him. Now you've got a situation going on with Iran, and all these news outlets will remind everybody what the price of gas is today. I mean, it's just, my goodness.
It's still under $100 a barrel. Yesterday, I didn't check the price today. And this is in the middle, of hostilities. I know there's a ceasefire, but it's still hostilities. The oil's not flowing freely. And are you kidding me? That's because Donald Trump made us energy independent in his first term. We got derailed by Biden, of course, with his anti-American policies. Now it's back open for business in America. It's too bad that Shapiro is our governor, because Pennsylvania could be potentially the wealthiest state in the nation had Governor Mastriano, opened up our natural gas resources and our oil resources and our coal, because at this point, we could be selling it hand over fist to the Europeans and to the Japanese and maybe even to the Chinese, and it just Pennsylvania would have a golden age of economic freedom, but it's just not to be. Josh Shapiro has done nothing but added restrictions to our energy sources. While we welcome the concept of AI centers, I don't welcome the idea that the burden is going to be passed on financially to people like you and me, because they're going to suck up the oil and the water. And so that's why I recently introduced a bill, actually, saying AI centers, if you're coming in, we prefer you not to use our great farmland. First off, that doesn't make any sense. Use the old mall. I got a mall down the street here that's vacant in Chambersburg. You use that parking lot, repurpose it. But you should bring in your own energy and your own water needs as well, instead of passing the burden on to the customers out there who live in the area.
And that's the way to do it. And I will be honest with you, it's funny you bring that up, because we have some issues right here in our area with an ICE detention center and also these data centers coming up that has really been a hot topic. And as you said, I think in the right spot and doing it the right way, it's fine. But, we've got some great land here in Pennsylvania, right here in our area. We're a rural area where agriculture is one of our, top things. So, again, I think these things are good, but done in the right spot and in the right way.
Yeah, I mean, no, I get it. You can't use all the brownfields, but where you live, there's lots of brownfields left over from the mining and all that. So if you can put some of these facilities, if it's not dangerous, on brownfields or old industrial parks or old parking lots of defunct malls like we have across the state, rather than going after grade A farmland, and which we lost forever. And, the biggest concern that I do have, of course, is energy prices, thanks to Josh Shapiro. It shouldn't be this way, Jay-Z. I mean, we're the third greatest energy producer for coal, second greatest for LNG. Why are we paying one of the highest in the nation here? Thanks, Josh, for your anti-people policies. And that's why we need to open up our resources in the Southwest, and the people of Pennsylvania need to benefit from that.
Yes. Now, if we could, though, I just want to double back and finish up with the Iran situation, because you would know better on this than I would think anyone else. Negotiations are going on. You hear this all the time. I don't know that you can negotiate with these people, because it just seems like they kind of try and buy time. But the other thing, Senator, I'm asking is, who are we negotiating with even right now? Because aren't we on the second or third power structure or whatever it might be there?
Yeah, so all their senior leaders except the foreign minister, you know, have been targeted and eliminated. And the, you know, the son of the great Ayatollah, air quotes, great.
Yes.
Apparently, he was severely injured in an air attack, so we don't even know. We haven't seen him.
Right.
And so the foreign minister, you know, has been going to Pakistan. Pakistan is a close friend of Iran, and ironically, us as well. So they're the, you know, they're the middleman in this. But it seems like their Islamic guard has conducted a coup against the political leadership, whoever's left here, because it looked like we had a deal with the foreign minister, and then the generals and colonels stepped in and said, nope, we're not having any deal with the Americans. So that's the question, you know, who exactly is in charge?
And that's the thing, and that's why I find it hard, because you hear about, you know, negotiations. Negotiations kind of fell apart. They didn't fly to Pakistan this last time. The president said he's not going to make that long trip because of the deal that they had sent him. He said he read the first line and threw it in the garbage, for goodness sake. So,
yeah.
And then where do you go once a deal is struck? Like, what's the next step? Because obviously the people of Iran are some great people. It's the regime and the people running things that are the issue.
You know, Iran, they're an ancient people, like the Israelites, an ancient people. Ironically, for most of its history, it had a good relationship with the Jewish people. I mean, when the Jewish people were held captive in Mesopotamia, modern-day Iraq, by the Babylonians, it was the Persians, you know, who conquered Babylon, and then they left the Israelis, they wanted the Jewish folks to return to their homeland, and Cyrus, the great king of Persia, he's mentioned in Daniel, the book of Daniel in the Bible, and he assisted in the rebuilding of the temple in Jerusalem. I mean, very sophisticated ancient people, and Iran is not just Persian. It's only about half its population is Persian. It's very diverse ethnically. You know, you have Baluchs in the southwest on the Pakistani border. You have like 15% of the population are Azeris near the Azerbaijan border in the north, in the northwest of the country. You have Kurds on the Iraqi border. You have Assyrian ancient Christians, the people of Nineveh, the Assyrian people are there, Christians. You have Arabs, of course, near Kuwait. So it's a diverse country, but it's been under the thumb of these radicals since 1979, and we see the people are tired of it. So the disappointing thing, of course, is that the people have not risen up, because by the time the air campaign began, we found out about 50,000 or so were executed and killed by the Revolutionary Guard. So it's tough.
Yeah, that wrap your mind around that is an awful lot of people. My goodness.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
I wonder if the leadership of the movement, you know, had been wiped out, and that's why we're not seeing this, because this is the opportunity people have been waiting for. You know, Obama walked away from them during the Green Revolution, and you know, and so many opportunities lost under Democrat presidents. But now that they have this opportunity here, I just wonder if the leadership has been taken out of the anti-regime folks, and there's no one there calling the shots anymore.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. This is probably the greatest chance that the people have had, because, as you said, previous presidents, and definitely Obama comes to mind, did nothing. I mean, when there was a chance there, did nothing.
Yeah, he walked away from them.
Right.
It's bizarre.
So now the other thing that's going on, and, you know, I found this ironic. I wanted to share this with you because I was out the other day and talking to some of my friends, and your name came up, and we were talking about the fact that how the president has brought this individual on, and you know, into his cabinet, and you know, offered them these different positions, and we were saying, what about you? Because you and the president are tight; he respects you, and vice versa. And it was funny because I am not kidding, but 24 hours later, the news comes out about the ambassador to Slovakia. It was almost like Beetlejuice. We were talking about it, and all of a sudden, it happens. So if you can, take us through that, like when you got the call and the president talked to you about this, take us through that.
I reached, and you know, and it's just, politics is just so frustrating, Jay-Z.
Yes.
But the announcement was important, and it had nothing to do with the gubernatorial. But of course, people want to say, oh, you know, is Mastriano being bought off? No, it's stupid. So I first had discussions with the administration about the possibility of, you know, serving in any capacity, December of 2024. And then I had some health issues, and, you know, after sending out a revised resume to President Trump directly and to his administration, I had some health struggles, and Rebbe's like, you need to heal up, and you just, mm-hmm. if God wants us to have this thing, you know, it'll still be there when you're done. And it was a long healing process. And so I recovered, and then last fall, I re-engaged with the administration, and within 12 hours, I sent my resume to the administration, and suggesting some positions and asking for some positions, and they got back to me in 12 hours, and thus began a long interview process and a very thorough vetting process. You know, I had a top secret clearance for 30 years in the Army, and so I had my background investigated 8 or so times, but I found this very thorough. And then they go through your financials. There's the government. Donald Trump's administration goes to great pains to make sure there's no conflict of interest, that I will not benefit financially from any position I'm put into, and if there's any conflict of interest, I have to disinvest or decline decline the offer from the administration. It's very thorough. There's a lot of integrity goes into this here. And it's a long process, at times frustrating, because there's lots of backs and forth, questions, clarity, confirmations, you know. And then it was all about timing. And we got the word on the 11th of May, and Rebbe and I are just so excited and so honored to be able to serve our country in this capacity.
I'll bet. Now, tell us a little bit about Slovakia. Folks out there might have heard of this country and like Senator, but give us a little bit of background about them if you can.
Yes, yeah, so about 5 million people live in Slovakia. It's the first time they've had their independence after. So it used to be Czechoslovakia, and before that it was the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And so, they've always been, like, occupied or part of something else. And so they got their independence in the early 90s where they had the Velvet Divorce, I guess. So they peacefully broke off from the Czech Republic.
Mm-hmm.
Czechoslovakia is Czech and Slovakia, you know, so it was two right. countries in one. About 5 million there. It's a beautiful country. The capital is Bratislava. It's the only capital that borders two countries. It borders Austria and it borders Hungary. It's on the Danube River. It has a rich culture, rich history. Pennsylvania has deep ties with the Slovak people. About 250,000 Slovaks emigrated to Pennsylvania. So, you know, multiply that now with descendants and offspring. And it's an honor to be selected to do this. I have served alongside Slovak soldiers in NATO. I worked in NATO for 4 years. I served alongside them in Afghanistan, in Turkey, in Poland, in the Baltics. I mean, I think this France and in the Netherlands and Germany. I mean, I've been around good chunk of the world with the Slovak soldiers in NATO, and it's going to be fantastic. I think the key takeaway for Americans is that it borders Ukraine, so it's a very important part of the NATO alliance and American interests. It has a conservative government. I understand the prime minister is an outstanding man, but I can't get ahead of myself, so I'm a nominee. I'm not the ambassador yet.
Right.
I'm a nominee. So the next step, of course, is the U.S. Senate. They have advising consent, so they have to vote on my confirmation. And so I'm just entering that phase now. I'll start meetings here shortly, individual private meetings with senators who are members of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. And they'll ask me questions. They'll list their priorities. They'll want to, you know, talk about my background and my priorities. And, of course, my priorities are the president's priorities. You know, ambassadors are assigned to carry the message and position of the President of the United States. And mm-hmm. so, obviously, I'm in line with Donald Trump's vision for Europe and NATO and its need to stand up and do more and not to tie America's hands when we've been, you know, we're actually, NATO exists because of America. NATO would not be there without America. It would be a paper tiger.
Right.
And so, I'll go through the interviews, and then I'll eventually be scheduled to testify before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. It'll be broadcast on C-SPAN, I surmise.
Yes.
I'll be given like a 5-minute opening statement or less, and there'll be probably 3 or 4 other ambassadors, probably also from Europe, nominees, and the senators will ask questions, and They'll do a vote of committee, and after that, it goes to the floor of the Senate. They've been doing these in block now, which means it's much like we do in Pennsylvania, the state Senate. We advise and consent as well. And, you know, sometimes we do individual names, but usually it's a list of people. Like when I chair the Veterans Affairs Committee, so promotions for National Guard officers go through my committee. And, you know, we'll have a group of, you know, six to ten that will, they'll have a hearing. They'll testify just as I'm doing DC. They'll testify before us. We'll vote. It goes to the Senate in block, you know, in a group of names. So, you know, timeline, it's impossible to really predict. The average timeline of the past couple lists has been about 5 months, I'm told, by the people in D.C. It's all about timing and calendar. And, you know, right now there's, you know, of course, budgets being worked on, National Defense Authorization Act is being worked on. And those take priority over nominees.
Right, right. So now I guess some of the people were wondering out there, and let's just, again, we don't like to get out in front of our skis, as they say, but say everything goes well and, you know, you are confirmed. What happens now with your Senate role? People are curious, you know, as we move forward.
Yeah, so I am staying in my Senate position. I know as soon as the announcement came out in the district, some sharks started circling, you know,
yep.
People with ambitions to want to take the position.
Exactly.
I'm not going anywhere until I'm confirmed by the
Good.
Senate. So I'm confirmed, and I have a swearing-in day, you know, locked in. I'm serving as your state senator. I'm still doing events around the district here. You know, people that sign up for my newsletter can see that I'm still active. I haven't walked away from the job. One of the greatest honors I've had in my life, of course, is being the senator for the Senate 33rd District and, you know, carrying our values here and being a voice of conservatism and of what, trying to do what's right for the people of this district here. You know, it always drives me crazy in conservative districts when how do you end up with a moderate or somebody wishy-washy? And okay, you asked me the question. What's going to happen?
Mm-hmm.
Let's war game it out. So let's say I'm confirmed. I'm not getting ahead of the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so assuming confirmation September, October, I announce, you know, my resignation, I step down. Then the lieutenant governor, Davis, he will pick a date for the election.
Okay.
But that's the election that seals the deal. So you have to have kind of like a primary, and that's done by the Republican and Democrat committees of Franklin and Adams County, the two counties I represent. And so they'll select a number of delegates, probably about 80 delegates total. I would guess probably about 50 from Franklin County and the remaining 30 from Adams, I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm.
And you would have a lot of candidates trying to get the vote of these, you know, 80 people that are on the committee, the Republican and Democrat committees respectively. And so that's a conferee. And the conferees will run a primary and pick the winner, and then that name will advance to the ballot. If I had to lay this out, if the nomination is early enough, let me just say my story. So
sure.
I think the guy that I came in, it was a special election. So Rich Alley stepped down in January of 2019. We had a conferee where, you know, Rebbie and I met with, like, we offered to meet with all 80 delegates. And we would meet them in restaurants or in living rooms, and they would just ask every night questions and get to know us. And so that was a few weeks. So January, resignation of this previous senator.
Mm-hmm.
I think the conferee vote was in March. So it was, I think it was March. So, you know, it was conducted in the Gettysburg Hotel, downtown in the square of Gettysburg. I won the first round, and so my name advanced to on the ballot, and the election was held in correspondence with the normal election cycle in May. So I won that special election in May, and then I was sworn in June. So let's war game it out now. Let's say that I am sworn in October with the timeline here. I don't think you'll have – I think the date will probably be in May of next year for the election, and a conferee will happen probably in January or February after I'm gone. So we will be without a senator for some months, as the people in this district were when Rich Shalloway retired.
Okay. That's what people were wondering. I mean, it's I know you'll do a great job, you know, if you are confirmed as ambassador to Slovakia, but you have done such a great job here in the Senate in Pennsylvania. So it's kind of, yeah, we wish you well, but man, we hate to lose you in the Senate.
Yeah, I know it's you know, it's bittersweet here. Rebbie and I really enjoyed working with the people of the 33rd district here. Yeah, I didn't take the retirement. I didn't take the car or any other inducements that existed when I first came in. My goal was just to serve the people as the best we can and hopefully make a difference. And I think we're pretty successful. This is not dissing anyone, but my predecessor was a senator for 10 years. And he got one bill signed into law, a good bill, Libre's Law, which protected animals. But in my now 7 years, this next month, it'll be 7 years, I've managed to have, I think, 14 bills signed into law, and I'll probably have two or three more. And they range the gamut from important for my generation was recognizing the Vietnam veterans. Pennsylvania had not ever really officially recognized set as part of the day. And so that was my bill getting 29 March set into law. My next goal, of course, before I leave out of here is get the Korean War veterans recognized as well, setting aside a day in July 26, I think it is. But lots of good bills, slow down, move over to protect our tow truck operators and first responders. You know, work closely with some of the tow truck operators in the district who approached me. Tom Brooker, actually, a tow truck operator in Chambersburg, approached me on that. The blue light law, adding blue lights to the back of tow trucks when they're in operation, because there were studies done in Illinois and Texas that people pay more attention. They think it's a cop car rather than a tow truck. So it looks like the numbers are lower. It looks like we are saving lives, thank God. And that's just an example. So, you know, but I think most importantly was being a voice of reason during those dark days when the nation shut down and Governor Wolf shut us down.
Yep.
You know, that we could rally with the people that wanted our freedoms, wanted the right to decide how to run our lives and handle our kids and what have you. And that's what brought you and me together, actually,
yeah.
Those rallies in the Capitol.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, Senator. I said that will always hold a special place for me because that's exactly right. I mean, we came down, many times and took part in that. And it was fantastic.
Yeah, a lot of fun. I mean, it was dark times, and I was obviously I found the media in Pennsylvania particularly biased and hateful. When my announcement came out, you would think as much as I've been vetted that people would actually know my background because, like, you know, right away the inquirer's like, although he has no diplomatic experience, I'm like, okay. you guys are too busy, just full of hate and maliciousness that you never bothered to look at my bio or my resume. And I was one of the leading officers putting together the multinational coalition in Europe to deploy to Iraq. I was one of the guys in the room with 47 other nations, first in London, then in Warsaw, putting together that division. So I've interacted. That's one example. I was the lead planner for the Northern Option going through Turkey in 2003. I've worked in NATO. I briefed generals and prime ministers on strategies, on concepts, on deterrence. I mean, come on, guys. What an insult. A colonel in the United States Army, a professor at the Army War College, functional area 47, wow. And that, 12 years out of the country, multinational experience, working, side by side with men and women from around the world in Afghanistan and dealing with the Afghan government and the Pakistani government. I mean, we can be here all day. And that, I sent finally to one of the reporters, one of the decent ones, actually, the Inquirer, and she did that, I'm like, really? I mean, come on. You pretend to be my friend in the floor of the Senate, but you're going to gloss over that I am probably one of the, I think I'm qualified for the job. And so she did update the article there that was initially a hit piece, right wing, blah, blah, blah. It's like, it has nothing to do with the job. Stop it, guys.
Yep. It's amazing how they do that stuff. It really is. We're speaking with State Senator Doug Mastriano. I know, Senator, you got to get to that memorial event coming up, so we appreciate the time you spent with us. So I'll ask you two things, my friend. One, anything in closing that you might want to add before we let you go?
Well, that Rebbie and I, it's been an honor, being a voice in Pennsylvania for many people. And we think back finally to 2022, and you were a big part of my governor's race as well here. And, it really wasn't my race. It was the people's race. So we won despite the ardent opposition of the establishment. We saw, and this is just not, you know, cute quote, we saw them, you know, we saw them unite against me, you know, the weekend before the vote in May of 2022. And the people swept us in. There was nine people's names on the ballot. And originally, like 16 people tried to run. Nine made it to the ballot. And to sweep in with so many names on the ballot, so much money, $20-some million that I didn't have spent in the primary, a good chunk of it against me here, and we still won with about half the vote here.
Yeah.
The people's voice, you know, will not be silenced. We are a constitutional republic, and I have to say, stay encouraged. Not every election goes our way. I mean, Remy and I have lived that. That was the hardest speech I ever had to give Jay-Z the night that the election didn't turn out the way we had hoped.
I'll bet.
But it's a marathon. We have to be persistent. And you know, and then when the president calls, you answer the call. I mean, someone, yeah. He's like, hey, you know, can would you like to be the ambassador to Slovakia? Of course. Yeah. It would be an honor. And assuming confirmation from the U.S. Senate, it will be an honor. And I hope to bring the same values and integrity to Bratislava, Slovakia, as we, you know, try to do here in Harrisburg and in Chambersburg and in Gettysburg.
And I'm sure you will, and we'll be watching those hearings when they take place. That's for sure, Senator. So, as always, we like to do this. Before we let you go here on the program, if you can leave us with a prayer, my friend.
I love it, man. You're the only radio guy that does this here. They're bringing me back. God, I thank you for Jay-Z and his faithfulness over the years. I pray for blessings on him and his family. I just end up for the people of Pennsylvania that we don't grow weary in doing good, that we, you know, stay engaged, that we stay active, that you'll let Pennsylvania have a new birth of freedom, because our nation was born in Pennsylvania by William Penn's vision, the seed of a nation. And God, we ask you that the seed of a nation will be more than an example, but it'll be fulfilled in our time. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Senator, thank you so much. We appreciate the time. Safe travels on your Memorial Day event, and best of luck with the hearings. And we'll be watching, my friend, and we will remain in touch, I promise.
Thank you. Love you, brother. God bless.
God bless, my brother. Thank you so much.